Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Corner Store. I'm flying solo this evening because my co-host and good homie, Tar Mahadevan, is on assignment trying to get these latest articles out in the world and is meeting the deadline and cannot join us tonight. Salutes to Tar Mahadevan all day, every day. But tonight is a really, really great night at the Corner Store because we have an incredible person who has contributed so much to making sure that the city of Chicago's history and people are seen, are documented. You know, someone who ensures that the South Side in particular will be visible. Mm-hmm. Someone whose work I've admired for a long time. You know, I feel like I first saw, you know, some of the what must be the early work of you know, particularly hip-hop centered spaces. And I'm so excited to talk about the evolution mm-hmm. with one of the illest photographers and probably like one of the busiest people in the city right now, Tanika Johnson. Welcome to the Corner
Thank
Store.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. I'm so excited that you're here. And before anything starts, we have some snacks for you in the Corner Store because it's a Corner Store after all.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. Let me see what snacks you got.
Yeah, All right. Well, just, you know, out the gate, we have some Flaming Hot Cheetos Chipotle Ranch. So, you know, a little thrown in the mix. I feel like that's a new flavor they're throwing at you.
It is.
This is a little more healthy of an option. This is from our aspirational sponsor. They're not our official sponsor yet because we don't know how to get in touch with them, but we're just putting it into the world.
Okay.
RX Bar is a Chicago brand, and this is a maple sea salt. This is a delicious bar. It's 3 egg whites, 5 pecans, 4 cashews, 2 dates, no BS.
What?
RX Bar, yeah.
So I need to have that for breakfast.
Yeah, actually, that's a good
I'm
starter.
I'm going to save that for tomorrow morning so I can have that.
Okay. And then, you know, because I know that you're a very classy individual, this is some craft water, cucumber lime infused with electrolytes. So, you know, I hope. And feel
I've
free.
I've never had that.
Either have I.
Some craft water with my red dye 40 Cheeto Chipotle.
Listen.
No, that's good. I love it. You got to get some Vintners.
True.
Vintners,
yeah.
Crunchy
Curls. True. That's right.
It's a real Corner Store. Crunchy Curls.
That's true. But enjoy. Feel free to make as much. We love sound effects at the Corner Store.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah.
Good. However, I'm definitely going to have some of this craft water now.
Yeah. How is that? Because I was curious myself.
Oh, it's good.
Okay.
It is. It's really good.
Okay. You sense the cucumber and the lime?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. You'd be a great taste tester, too. I have one more gift for you, and it's because, and we're going to talk about it, obviously, your brilliant folded map exhibition at the Loyola Art Museum. But, you know, Jamila Woods and I at Young Chicago Authors have the privilege of working with what we call our Bomb Squad, which is a 12-person apprenticeship program that we do over the summer. 12 poets from Louder Than a Bomb out of the 1,100 that are in the festival. We work with 12 over the summer for 5 weeks. They are, you know, it's for real. They're rooted in the work of making and documenting and reporting about the city, and they were struck by the brilliance of your exhibition, and so they responded. We did some ekphrastic work in the space where they actually sat down, you know, in the exhibition and composed. So these are poems that they created, you know, for you and for themselves and for the world. But the work is outstanding, and you know, I thought you would appreciate it. So
I do. Oh my! You are gonna make me cry.
Oh yeah, it's there, and it's an incredibly special crew, and you know.
Oh my gosh, this is so beautiful to have a response to my work that was really conceived when I was their age.
Yeah,
you know, like.
Well, they were incredibly moved. I mean, and it's a stunning exhibition. And you know, we could start there. I mean, I want to kind of go all the way back and come forward, but this exhibition is something where, you know, it's that back wall of the entire map of the city. Of course, they literally saw themselves in. And then there was so much of your portraits in the piece, both of space and people, kind of invited them to also imagine their own lives. And I, you know, of course, I don't, I'm curious about what the intended result is, but that is one of the things. It was a bridge into their own experience for them. And I think in some of those poems, you'll see that reflection, you know, that, that it is certainly, I think, about some of the, what you are also trying to get at in the MAPS exhibition, which I have a thousand questions about, but, it, you know, for them, it was an invitation into a reflection of their own experience too. So. Thank you so much. Gosh,
these are beautiful. Oh, busting that mission from Chatham to Ohio.
Well, they're yours, and you know they would at some point they would love to meet you. They are big, big fans.
Oh, I want to meet. I am fans of theirs. Oh my gosh.
But as the whole city is a big fan of yours, it seems now, right? This has been an incredibly big year for you. It has seen from a distance, from a position of being a fan. It seems like people are really taking note.
Yeah, it's and it's so funny because I mean it's my name, but I just feel like most of it is because they feel ownership of it, because it literally is an observation that we've all had, especially people who are from here. And if you've been here for years, it's an observation that you've had. And I just feel like everyone has responded to it in this like great way, because they're like, you did my idea. Someone finally did that idea I had. That's literally what people
and that's think. In regards to the folded map exhibition.
Yes,
so
yes.
so I mean, just because we're there and we'll go back, but yeah. talk about what that idea is.
The idea of recognizing Chicago's uniqueness, our map through our grid map, how we're laid out on a grid. And then if you've had the experience of going to different neighborhoods, that's an observation that you have right away, recognizing that, oh, I know these streets. They're the same streets. Oh, it looks so different. And then just, you know, kind of cataloging that and just putting it in the back of your mind. But it's definitely, you know, an observation I know that a lot of Chicagoans have had.
Certainly. And in the exhibition, of course, you do this, you know, pairing of those spaces at opposite ends of the grid, as it were. You're mirroring in some instances the numbers themselves. If it's a north address, you document the south address. And in some instances, then not only are you doing it spatially, but you're doing it with people.
Yes. And that was an evolution of the project that was not intentional, but doing the project, it just evolved into that. And I knew that was the direction that I had to go, because my first resident pair is on that big wall, Nanette and Wade. And so you don't see the video documentation of them, because they were like my little experiment. I was like, I'm just going to do audio. And when they agreed to meet each other, because first I was like, hey, nobody's going to meet each other. Let me just ask. And Wade said yes. And then Nanette said yes. And I was like, really? So I was like, okay, let me see what happens. So I wanted to prepare, do my practice, my artistic work. I was like, you know, I'm going to make the most of this moment. Let me really come up with these questions that drive at the point of what I want to make of them having a space to have a conversation and navigate some really difficult issues in a delicate way, but really rooted in their honesty and willingness to participate in this weird, especially at the time, very weird concept. So I prepared my questions, you know, consulted with my city bureau family. I was like, is this good? Is this good? And then they met, and the conversation that they had, I was moved by as the artist. And I was like, I have to do more of these, because their conversation was just so captivating. I forgot that I was supposed to be kind of guiding the conversation, because it was one thing that Wade said to Nanette when she was describing her neighborhood. And by this point he was at her house. So this was his first time coming to Inglewood. And so really part of the participation of the project is not only the relationship building with me and meeting the resident, but your observations that you make when you travel to visit the other person.
Of course.
And so, you know, he had just made this, you know, travel to Inglewood and got to hear Nanette describe this neighborhood that he was just seeing for the first time. And he told her, you know, I feel so guilty that I have access to everything that I need in just a matter of 10, 15 minutes and you don't. And they just had this long conversation about why, you know, they start bringing up like TIF funding, like, why don't you have this? What, you know, what is it? And so they were really connected by Wade being empathetic and Nanette just being very honest and, you know, sharing her experience of living in this neighborhood that has been disinvested in. And so it was then I was like, this it right here. This is it.
But was that your theory going in, that through this introduction or, you know, through even the, mm-hmm. you know, symbolically placing some of these images together, that there would be the conversation about disparity, about...
Yes. So with the address pairings, just the actual architecture, I definitely wanted to raise the question of why. Because, you know, being from Inglewood, growing up in Inglewood... you know, a lot of the conversation around Inglewood is just its current condition, you know, the gun violence, which is definitely an issue. But when you think of Inglewood as a neighborhood and geographically speaking, it's a huge neighborhood. It's like the largest neighborhood in Chicago when you combine West Inglewood and Inglewood. Mm. So you can have a varied life experience in Inglewood and people don't realize that, you know, like... people were surprised that I had never been impacted directly by gun violence. I'm like, well, I grew up on a block that wasn't, you know, and people just don't get that. And so I really wanted to bring the conversation of a neighborhood like Inglewood to people understanding the history of it, you know, like the issues of the economics, the education, the schools that are closing, the gun violence. Like, these are the cancerous results of a community that has withstood decades of systemic racism, disinvestment, you know. And so I just wanted to kind of remove the idea of what people think of Inglewood as like just a home of criminals and people, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, if you remove individuals and you just look at the architecture, the environment, what does that say? Because you can't blame that on residents. You know, a building that's decaying, that obviously looks like it hasn't been occupied, who are you going to blame that on? You know, that's not a result of the present day crime. That's the result of something else larger. So I really wanted to remind people of Chicago's history and kind of legacy of segregation and how it created neighborhoods that are struggling with the conditions that Inglewood is. So that was the intent. And I wanted to do that visually because I love reports and everything. And, you know, I just came from Metropolitan Planning Council and they had that wonderful segregation report. But, you know, I'm a visual learner and I was like, it's so many other examples outside of statistics to reveal this. And the favorite one that everybody knows about is Red Line, where you could just ride the train from north to south. But I was like, it's so many other examples.
Yeah.
So that was the original intent. And then it just evolved into the residents. But definitely the address pairs. I wanted to have like a room full of like 25 examples. So that was...
Well, it's a stunning room. It seems like the room that should be required viewing for every citizen mm-hmm. in the city. You know, because it gets at just that stark disparity that exists, you know, pairing addresses, mm-hmm. pairing landscapes, mm-hmm. and then to get in, obviously, to the narratives of individuals from the city. Mm-hmm. It, in a lot of ways, seems to be a continuation of some of your overall project, which mm-hmm. is giving face, multiple faces to yeah. a community in particular that has been so, you know, it's been, it's, it, Inglewood is going through a story that, when it is not in the mouths and experiences and bodies of people who live there, seems to be grossly monolithic.
Yes. We like to say we've been bullied in the media, like insanely, like just ridiculously attacked, you know. Just some of the crimes that have been reported, it's like, that wasn't even in Inglewood, but you know, they give the street location, and you know, to people who don't know, like 75th and it was in the Inglewood neighborhood. We're like, no, that is not. Yeah, it's just not.
It's a placeholder. It's a placeholder for a certain kind of, one, lazy reportage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by and large, it has come to symbolize, you know, the worst of the white supremacist imagination about what, you know, the city of Chicago is. It becomes just a placeholder for all of that.
It does.
I want to talk about your work broadly, because it's going to be instructive for how we get to the Loyola exhibit. But just so people are, as we're on it, how long is the exhibit running for?
Oh,
and how can people go see? It's a free exhibition, too. So there is no excuse to not see this incredibly brilliant, important exhibition. But how long is it running for?
October 20th. Okay. Is when it is. So it's a nice long run.
Yeah.
I am so lucky to be at a museum institution that really has an extended run for their exhibit. So it is literally the entire summer.
right off Michigan Avenue at Chicago, just north of Chicago Avenue. The Red Line will take you there. The 66 right there. Bus will take you there. So many ways
All
there. And it's free. And the museum... The hour, do you know the hours?
Yes, so I do know that Tuesday is their extended day. It opens every day at 11, Monday through Saturday. Tuesday, it stays open till 8 p.m. And on the other days, with the exception of Sunday, because it is Loyola, it is a religious institution, it's closed.
Yeah.
On the other days, it's 11 to 6.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be exciting, too. I think everybody should actually go see it, and I think it's going to be really important for schools to go see it. So I'm even excited once we get back into the schools to, you know, send some of our students there again. But let's go back. So are you, you're born and raised in Inglewood?
Yes, born and raised in Inglewood. I had a couple of stints living in other neighborhoods when I was younger. So that's when my observations began. So when I was 7 years old, I grew up on 62nd and Loomis. So that's just my home base. And then when I was 7 years old, my mom and I moved up north for the first time. And that was in Uptown, 4550 North Clarendon. I'm laughing because a lot of my friends, that was my first time ever being up north. And to live there,
and you're seven.
I'm seven.
So what are you in your 7 year old mind? What are you noticing that is catching your interest?
First of all, I'm noticing that the lake is so close. I was like, you could just walk there. Oh wow! And then it was my first time living in a high rise building, because I grew up. My grandmother owned the building that we lived in on 62nd and Loomis. So it was a two flat, very traditional. And you know how it goes on the South Side. Like normally, if a relative owns the building, it's just a family building. So I was used to up and downstairs. So this is my first time being in a high rise. And so that was new. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to wait for the elevator for people. I have to like share laundry facilities with people. So that was new and interesting. But as I got older, because we stayed there till I was like 11 years old, so I was really surprised by like the freedom the children had. Like at 10, 11 years old, like they was going to the park by themselves. They were going to the lake by themselves. I mean, and then I was a part of that group too, but that was definitely not a freedom I had living on the South Side.
Did that have to do with your age? Did that have to do with
probably,
the community?
Probably both.
Yeah.
But I know that because I did go back to 62nd and Loomis a lot between those years of 7 and 11, because my grandmother and my uncles, who are like my brothers, lived there. And I definitely couldn't go too far because of my age and everything. But up north, it was just like, yeah, you just got to get a group of friends. You could go. So to me, Northside equaled like freedom. I felt a little bit more grown. Mm. So that was till I was 11. Then we moved back to 62nd and Loomis because my grandmother was sick. And so we stayed there until my junior year in high school. And so it was when I started high school going to Lane Tech that.
Wow.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a good long commute.
Oh, yes. It's a good long commute.
How long did it take you?
I had to be at the bus stop. I had to be at 63rd and Loomis to get the bus no later than 5:50 in the morning.
To be at school at?
8.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
in that trek across the city.
Oh, yeah.
You saw some things.
Yes. And so not only did I see some things, but this is a connection to you all. My freshman year, in addition to traveling to Lane Tech from Inglewood, I also got accepted into Young Chicago Authors.
What?
Oh. Yes, I was in their third class.
Wow.
Yes, 1993.
Wow.
And that was yes.
That's amazing.
I know, right?
Wow.
Yep,
so
bah boom.
Bah boom.
Yep, every Saturday.
Division Street, 2049 yep. West Division.
Yep.
The original.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And so that was my first time ever going to Wicker Park, Humboldt Park. So
dang.
I was from the age of like 13 to 16, I was like, oh my gosh, our city. So
yo, I didn't even know you were an alum.
Oh yes, I'm
yo,
an alum.
Yo, we got to do a better job claiming you shit.
I know. Listen, I'm an alum.
We about to holler at
I'm an alum.
Bunch of things.
I'm an alum.
Okay.
Yep. Was there? Yeah. My whole high school time. Yep.
Right. And so when you say you were struck by that notion of our city, what do you mean? What was capturing your attention at that time?
So you know, living in Inglewood and then spending your whole entire day at Lane Tech, that is just like a huge just mixture of all of the nationalities and diversities in Chicago. Like literally, like I met my first friends from the west side of Chicago at Lane Tech. I met people who were Belizeans and Dominican. Like I had never been, I would have never been exposed to the variety of nationalities at that early of an age had I not gone to Lane Tech. Then when you add Young Chicago Authors to the mix, like that's every Saturday. In addition to, like I said, making that trek to Lane Tech. So now on Saturdays, I got to get up.
Does not stop. Go to Humboldt Park. Go to, yeah. Like,
right. Wicker, Humboldt, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, okay.
So you were writing bars, first of all. Let's talk. The pen game is
yes.
Wild.
Yes. It,
well, I could tell from the artist statements
it used to be.
No. It
so
still is.
Let me tell you the funny story. So, you know, I got introduced to photography while I was at YCA.
There was a dark room in the space
yes,
back in the day.
I was there before it was built. And I was there while they were building it. And
wow.
So I started venturing off too much into photography. And Bob was like, you know, you still got to write. I was like, but my photography is my poetry. Why can't?
Yo,
yeah, I was zoning out. I was like, well, you introduced me to you had the class. So it's your fault. But yeah. So I was just really getting exposed to not only one, how segregated Chicago is, but the beauty and the cultural vitality in like all of these different neighborhoods. And, it just really stuck with me. And of course, I thought about how my neighborhood, my home neighborhood didn't have those things. And so I was really struck by the lack thereof in my neighborhood. Cause I was like, so for a kid like me, who's interested in the arts, I have to like go all the way to this other school for the education my mom wants me to have. Then I have to go all the way to this other neighborhood for this kind of programming. So I was accustomed to always leaving my neighborhood for stuff to really, enrich my interests, my passions, and stuff like that.
And of course, what does that then say to a young person growing up in that neighborhood if they have to leave it in order to get those things?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's one thing I really remember. I remember when I moved to Uptown, to 4550 North Clarendon, I was like, I wish my friends could just meet each other, you know? But I knew that wasn't going to happen because it's just too far apart and it was just going to require too much. But yeah, that stuck with me because I was like, they would really like each other.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why we started Louder Than a Bomb was for that reason. You know. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the moment you kind of started to get into photography. But before, what was mom doing? I mean, what does mom do? What were her interests? Why was she down to kind of send you halfway across the city for a school and for a Saturday writing program? Like, how did that happen for?
Well, she was open to me getting exposed to all kinds of arts, you know, extracurricular activities. And even before that, funny enough, the grammar school that I went to from fourth to eighth grade was Holy Name Cathedral on Chicago and State. It's now some other, I can't remember the name it is now. But that's always funny to me because I'm like, oh, it's down the street from Luma. And that's right. But my mom was really unconventional in that way. Like, I went to Holy Name Cathedral, not only because it was a small Catholic school and she wanted me to have that experience, but it was close to her job, you know, because she worked not too far. So I was able to take the train with her and she'd take me to school and then she just walked to work. So she really kind of understood pairing the convenience and then also making sure I had access to different kind of experiences and education. But my mom, she's an artist. She's a writer. She's a writer. So she used to go to Green Mill. Okay. She used to. Yeah. She was a part of.
What's your mom's name?
Rita Lewis.
Rita Lewis.
Yes.
Okay.
She's actually the reason I know a lot of older writers because she was in the Black Screenwriters Association and they met like all the time. And she was dragging me along. And so I would often be that kid doing homework while they were having their writing sessions. And so I was around that a lot. And
you remember some of the writers there? I mean, is this like Sam Greenlee hanging out here?
Yes. I knew of him before I knew who he was.
So,
my mom was a part of that group. So when I told her I wanted to go to YCA, that was a no-brainer. She's like, okay, that's great.
Right.
And the reason I even know about YCA is because my close, dear friend from grammar school, Eunice Folletti, that publication that used to be out, you probably remember this, New Expressions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so she told me about, she's like, did you see this new program in New Expressions? Because, you know, that was the publication to read.
It really was, right?
Yeah, because it really combined all of the schools kind of together. Because my friend went to Whitney Young. We went to grammar school together, but she went to Whitney Young. And she still told me, even though I'm at Lane Tech, she's like, pick up the issue of New Expressions because it has this writing program that you'd be interested in.
I don't think it exists anymore.
It doesn't.
Yeah, rest in peace, though. I remember.
New Expressions. Yeah. But yeah, no, my mom is a writer. Is an artist.
Okay. So. All right. So it's in the blood.
Mm-hmm. It's in the blood.
All right. So the camera, how does that land in your hands?
I was at YCA. And they were like, you know, we're going to incorporate some different classes, you know, some different offerings you all might want to. How many of you all are interested in taking a photography class? I was like, I'll try. And the reason that I was interested is because I was already, like, my dad is a fanatic with, like, taking pictures, you know. So he's a photographer in the sense of a documentarian. He's not interested in the craft of it. He just knows he wants to capture every moment. So I was very used to and accustomed to seeing my whole, like, childhood in pictures. So I understood the value of photography and pictures and just the nostalgia and what it can offer you as an understanding your childhood, your history, you know, because he just had so many pictures. So I knew how his sisters, my aunts, how they looked when they were in high school, and they just, he just hoarded pictures. So when.
And what did he do, your dad?
He is a, what tradesman is that? Tool and die maker?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's an old school
trade. Yeah, no doubt. That, yeah.
Yeah, so he does that.
That's a real craft.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a real craft. So he's been doing that for decades. But his little outlet was taking pictures.
Wow.
And so when it was offered at YCA, I was like, yeah, okay. And I just fell in love.
Okay.
I fell in love. I couldn't stop after that. I turned into what my dad is. I just like, I want to take pictures of everything. And then it evolved into, okay, I don't like how that picture looks. What can I do to improve it? Then I just started getting into the craft of it. And then wanting to pursue it, you know, seriously in college.
And did you go to school for it?
Yeah, so I went to Columbia College, and so
did you graduate?
Yes.
Oh wow!
I know who does that.
Well,
at Columbia?
We have many guests who start out. At
I was
Columbia.
On the 5-year plan.
Okay,
you know.
Well, look, you got through. We have many folks who go for a semester.
I know Columbia.
Yeah. That's the official like rap plan in the city of Chicago.
Is.
Go to Columbia for 6 weeks.
And then that's, I know.
Yeah.
I know, but I was one of the few that finished.
Yeah.
But I had some motivating factors, which I'll tell you about. But yeah, so when I was in high school, I was really interested in, you know, photography. And so my mom started finding programs for me. Columbia College had a high school institute. I took classes. College level introductory photography classes my junior year in high school, well, the summer of. And then because of my mom's connection with Black Screenwriters Association, she knew a lot of black journalists. The Chicago Association of Black Journalists had a summer program. And I took that, and that's when I met my first photography mentor ever, Ovi Carter. And he's a photojournalist with the Tribune. And he, you know, kind of took me under his wing. He said I had an eye. And I told him that, you know, I wanted to go to college and major in, you know, photography. And he was like, you have an eye. Just continue to take pictures. You'll get better. Major in something you have to prove to people you can do. You know, your pictures will always be your proof. He's like, what do you want to major in? I was like, I think journalism. He's like, just get a degree in journalism. So that's what I took his advice, and it was the best advice. I took his advice. And so all of my electives, I just filled up with as many photography classes I could. But
there certainly is a photojournalistic
yes, you know, there is.
Hand in your craft, in your art.
Yes.
Now.
Yes, definitely. Definitely documenting
people's
culture,
lives,
people, portraits, documentation is heavy in my work and in my practice. And also speaking to the people that I photograph is truly embedded in that, like, photojournalism. But it's also informed the kind of photography and images that I can get, because I've included that photojournalism element where you have to talk to your subject. You have to get their information. But what that does as a photographer, differently from a photojournalist, it creates that relationship. So they're able to relax, you know? So whereas someone who does portraiture, they understand that you have to talk to your subject to get the, you know, and so this is something that photojournalists know also. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely used that in my work. And
when, how soon into your college experience did those things begin to meld together? Because they seem seamless in your practice now.
Yeah, it wasn't seamless then.
Okay.
It wasn't.
So what was that process like? Because it's, I mean, that obviously is the evolution of the artist.
Yeah.
But yeah, how did that begin to morph for you?
So I started Columbia in 1997, the fall. And if you remember, that was when digital photography was just starting to come around, and where photography as a medium was kind of like really trying to be fine art. Like it was finally being accepted as fine art.
Were there photographers at that time that you were taking, you know, you were particularly interested? There were, you know, you
yeah. So yeah. This is the reason that I would say no, because I was taking a lot of photography classes as like my elective. So they were introductory. And Columbia at the time didn't have a robust like photography program that includes, you know, documentary photography, photojournalism, all kind. It was very distinct, like fine art, photojournalism. And photojournalism wasn't even a full-on program at the time. It was a supplement to journalism. So I was just in this weird space because I was like, well, no one thinks it's fine art because it's not. This is what I was thinking at the time. And I was like, it's photojournalism, but I don't like taking pictures that have to deal with a story. So I was in classes doing the kind of work that I'm doing now, but it wasn't really received well because it was being critiqued as if it were trying to be fine art. And I constantly got reminded that, well, you're doing, you know, like documentary style. And so
a real high low thing happening.
Yes, I mean, yeah. So I never viewed my photography at that time as art. I didn't at all, because I was being questioned and critiqued so much to the point I was like, all right, I'm gonna just focus on the technical aspects and the craft of it, because clearly no one thinks that this is art, and clearly I have to be, you know, taking photos for a news story for it to be valued.
And let me in that class, students, professors, I mean, are there a lot of folks of color in the space?
No, at that time I was like one of maybe two.
Right, because I'm also wondering,
especially
how
in the dark room, especially, yeah,
it so was, to speak, yeah, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, yeah. So I'm wondering how racialized some of that is too, given the subject matter.
Definitely a lot, because I knew that, and this speaks to who and why I wasn't exposed to a lot of photographers. Because had I had teachers who exposed me or saw the kind of work that I was doing and introduced me to photographers, historic photographers who were doing that work, I wouldn't have felt the way that I did. But I did not learn about a lot of the historic photographers who essentially, like, the tradition I'm carrying on. I didn't learn about them till later, much later in life, like in my late 20s when I started meeting other artists who saw my work and say, oh, this reminds me of that, you should look into that, or me just trying to find out on my own. At that time at Columbia College, the only photographers I knew were photojournalists like John White, Ovi Carter, Gordon Parks. I later learned about Roy De Carava, but I didn't even learn about Carrie Mae Weems until my mentor, Maida McNeil, told me that some of your work reminds me of Carrie Mae Weems. And that was literally like, what, 6 years ago? And I was like, who is that?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I didn't know a lot of the photographers that I know now who really inspire me and validate me. I didn't know about them then.
So this is part of the reason why expanding and the inclusion in a canonical practice is so essential, because if these folks are being left out of that level of education, it's that I mean, that's a crime.
It is. And it was only my like pure artistic passion that kept me interested in photography. But if I left it up to the educational system at that time in 1997, 98, 99, at Columbia College to kind of show me, to validate my work, I wouldn't have kept going.
So how did you? Because I think some of the folks who listen to the show are young creatives. Mm-hmm. I think some of them are in the city. I think some mm-hmm. of them go to Midwest liberal arts schools who are also devoid of a, mm-hmm. you know, kind of robust educational practice. And so what was that internally that was propelling you to continue?
Home, you know, really, really surrounding yourself with your fellow artists, with the people who are where you're from, who can tell you, no, this is great. This is, you know, really good stuff. They might not have the language to describe it artistically, but they were my validation, my friends and home, you know. That was all I had. And I
and
just
they would
continue.
See, like, folks at home would see your photos?
Yes. So what happened is, you know, my friends knew I took pictures. And, of course, I have a lot of friends who are hip-hop artists. So they were like, you come take pictures in my show.
Right.
And so...
Which is how I first came into contact with your work. Yeah. And I forget exactly where, but I saw
it.
I was like, yo, who is this documenting, like, every...
I know. That,
like,
was a project.
B-boy, B-girl
cypher. That was a project of mine that I wanted to do, too. I was like, I wanted to do a whole photography project on Chicago hip-hop and just have... Yeah. So it was that.
Where were you going to doc? And because, you know, I mean, if this is the late 90s, early mm-hmm. aughts,
it was the late 90s. However, there was a huge gap because this was the motivating factor for me to finish college. I got married and had my daughter at 22.
Yes.
so this is the 2000s. So I wasn't going out to know hip hop. My 20s, the 2000s, it was just like
you were
motherhood.
Raising a kid.
So I didn't pick that back up until I was like 28. So yeah, that was like 10 years ago.
So Chicago hip hop is also very different.
It's very different. Elements of it are the same, but it was very different. But I was like, oh, it's different. So this is new to me, but it's still kind of the same. Like, we're not so old, but yeah, it was very different. So I was doing a lot of photography around that time, mm-hmm. 10 years ago.
So I'm curious about the end of the 90s as you were. Where were you going in some of those spaces? And then 10 years ago, where did you start to go?
Well, of course I was going to... Lit X, well, all right.
Yeah, I mean,
so that was that was the perfect place. I was like, oh, you know, it's the light right there. I can, yeah. So I got to play around with lighting, and film photography at Lit X.
What
a lot,
Mecca, really. I mean, what an incredible.
Exactly.
I mean, and I, you know, I was. That's also kind of one of the spaces I came up in, and mm-hmm. I think romanticized it like a lot of us have. But that really was such an incredibly powerful and special place for creative people from all genres in the city.
It was one of the places that validated me as, you know, a budding writer and photographer. That's where I met Mario. He saw my work early, my photography as a teenager, and he's like, this is good. And I was like, really?
You know so, Mario's cosign early on was important to so many, like, mm-hmm. now, like, I guess maybe our generation, but for me too, Mario mm-hmm. cosign, I'm like, yo, for real, like, you rock with me.
Uh-huh.
That's
and
why.
Tina.
And he did that mm-hmm. for so many people.
Exactly.
Yeah, Tina Howell mm-hmm. as well, of course.
Yep. So a lot of those little parties, I can't even remember, a lot of them places closed now.
Yes. No.
But probably all of them.
Except like the Metro. I don't know if you ever
I did take some pictures there with some friends that were performing and classic concerts. But so that was my experience at Columbia College. Now I do know that it's different there.
Yeah.
They do have a robust photography program that is definitely very inclusive. But yeah, it was a period where I didn't feel like my work was art because it was kind of in between, you know. It was documentation, photojournalism, but not really. It was street photography, but it wasn't what was considered fine art at the time, because a lot of abstract photography was considered fine art at the time. Now that's expanded. So I think for photography, now is a really good time to kind of merge genres. Mm-hmm. And I think another genre is kind of being created that's merging documentary photography and art. Like it's I don't even know what we're going to call it, but it's definitely a new genre kind of emerging.
And that's certainly where your work lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you call it, I guess?
I think it would, it's not even visual storytelling. It's like.
Well, one of the things I think about a lot, and I talk about this in terms of the writers, but I think of this as cross genre with Chicago artists. I talk about this aesthetic of realist working class portraiture, which I would put, you know, if I would be so bold, put your work into this category. I feel like Chicago artists are, in part because of who we're always around, it's we're constantly reporting, reflecting upon the body and labor. And it doesn't mean only people who are in the job itself, but people who work, because that's what the city is comprised of. And so the artists then are, you know, inevitably reflecting upon, you know, that reality for the people around us, ourselves included, as laborers.
That's true. It is definitely kind of like archival practice. It's like storytelling. It's knowing that your present day life and environment is valuable enough to the point where you passionately document it because you know in the future it will tell a necessary story. It's those neighborhoods, those moments, those people who could be excluded from future history, and knowing that now, so you can be the archivist, because a lot of the photojournalists who work for a lot the larger media outlets, like, their work now is in museums because it's the only documentation we have of Southside Chicago or Northside communities that were completely different before. And so I think now is a time where people are understanding the extreme value of photography and documentation outside of just, you know, for entertainment purposes.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the subject matter then. I mean, even outside of the current exhibition at the Loyola University Museum of Art, you know, who are you kind of turning the lens on? And what are some of the communities or some of the spaces that, you know, your photographs are representing?
Well, obviously my home, Inglewood, but it's really not just only because it's my home. It's because of what it represents. It's Inglewood is kind of like the poster child for so many neighborhoods in Chicago that are like it. And I really want to pay homage and respect and value the people who live in these communities, and show them that our life, our community is worth documenting. You know, it doesn't have to be attached to a story of violence or crime or a damage-centered perspective, and really showing the community the beauty that lies within it. And part of it was me focusing on my neighborhood, not just because that's where I lived, but I also wanted to challenge the idea that you have to go out of the country to really take captivating pictures, you know, because that is kind of what you get encouraged to do as a photographer, especially if you are trying to be a photojournalist. You know, you really want to document other countries, other stories, you know, that is what the goal is. But I was just like, okay, so who's going to document home then? Like, why is that less valuable? You know, why is the idea of the foreign or the exotic, you know, something that is more valuable? And so I just kind of got tired of not being able to, like, Google, like, Inglewood, Southside, Chicago, Westside, 1990s, and see photos, you know, just like regular photos. And I was like, this is sad, you know. I'm gonna still take pictures of my neighborhood. And if I could eventually have a platform and inspire and encourage other photographers in Chicago to do the same, then that'll be great. But yeah, there's value in documenting our own neighborhoods and our own city. Because when I was at Columbia College, a lot of people were transplants, and they were documenting kind of their home, but it wasn't viewed as It was just, it had a higher value for whatever reason. Mm. And so that's when I understood, like, oh, I'm documenting something that's urban, that doesn't really have, you know, that much appeal to the people that I'm around in this classroom. And so that just kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
And
so the focus of, you know, some of the work that I've been, you know, lucky to see is of people at a park, mm-hmm. at a barbecue, mm-hmm. People, you know, in, you know, kids on a bike in a mm-hmm. in a empty lot with dandelions, mm-hmm. You know, kids outside a corner store. It's mm-hmm. it's life in a community.
Yeah.
It's life as it is. It's you know, Miss Brooks talked about poetry as life distilled, and it's your photography is that. They're, you know, very beautiful portraits of people from, you know, mm-hmm. in, you know, multiple generations mm-hmm. living their lives in a community that, you know, it seemed if this community is continually overreported for, you know, violence that's not necessarily even occurring in that community, mm-hmm. your, you know, portraits are the counter narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you see yourself as a historian in that way, or someone who is, you know, consciously creating that counter narrative?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, because I had to learn how to answer that question, because it was not my intent to counter the narrative. And this is when I really want to speak to people who are like doing art for art's sake, like, do that, because I was doing that for years. You know, I was just taking photos in my neighborhood because I had the longing, like I had to do it. However, it came to a point where when I started doing a lot of community work, because my photographer self, I just left like outside of the community work, but it was my fellow community members who like saw the value, how my images were the counter narrative. And that's when we came together and really put forth that Inglewood Billboard Rising campaign, because it wasn't until then that I started to see how my work can be used to elevate this larger issue of not only Inglewood being bullied, but the issue of perpetuating stereotypes, of, you know, just all of those things.
And tell us a little about that campaign for folks who
might
have missed it.
The Inglewood Rising Billboard campaign was a resident-led, resident-funded campaign. Residents, Inglewood residents, raised money to rent, purchase 5 billboards for 9 months. And for 9 months, we put images, most of them mine, but images of the community on those billboards with the tagline of, we are Inglewood, there is love in Inglewood. And we rotated those images, different images, for 9 months. And so what ended up happening is we really wanted to do that just to instill, you know, just pride and hope in our own neighborhood. Like, this is what we want to see. We didn't even focus on what outsiders would look at it as. We were just like, this is what we want to do. We tired of these billboards here. They always have hair care products or whatever. Why not images of community? Tonika, you're a photographer here. Why not your picture? And we just, you know, it was a wonderful.
So what was that like to see your work in that giant space in your own neighborhood then?
Oh my gosh. It yeah, that's when I was like, I like this. I was like, I need some more shows or something.
Now this is last year?
Yeah, it was 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 2017. It started in May, April.
Right.
And it ended just in January of this year. And it was like, I can't even explain the feeling, because at that point I had only had my photography printed like just a few times on really great paper. So to see it on this large of a scale, And then to have the people that I photographed, like for me to know them and see them and see how happy and full of pride they were, and to know that I was able to assist in that. It was a nice feeling in Inglewood, especially when it started getting reported on. And so then we were like, okay, now we're interrupting this, you know, media attack on us with some different. And so that's when we were like, okay, this is good.
Right,
this
disrupting. Is good. Yeah,
yep, disruptors. Disrupting this. Yeah. Yeah.
And so what, because there was something then after that, before this current exhibition, right? I know there's been a lot of attention from that campaign.
Yeah, definitely.
But what are some of the things that have come for you?
Well, one of the things that I realized out of the Billboard campaign is that, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of platforms for visual artists of color in Chicago to be recognized on that large of a public scale. And that's when I was like, that's problematic, you know, because no one would really know about me outside of my friends. The larger Chicago public wouldn't know about me had that Billboard campaign not happened. And I wouldn't have had access to Loyola University Museum of Art without kind of that recognition. And so it just had me thinking, you know, like, it's so many of me's, if you will, out here in Chicago. I know so many talented photographers, visual artists, and really photographers, because it's really no space for, it's no platform for photographers of color to really get recognized, no central location, virtually or otherwise, for you to get constant introduction to different artists, photographers in Chicago. And so for me, that gave me, you know, another goal and intention. And it also encouraged me to ride this wave. I was like, okay, I have this recognition, I have this platform, and I also have something else I want to say. I've had this idea in my mind of Folded Map before Folded Map, since I was a teenager. If I don't do this project now, who knows when I'll be able to.
Right.
So I knew, I was like, okay, now you better do it. This is the time. You better work on that project that's been like clogging your brain since you were a teenager. So me seeing the social impact that a Billboard campaign can have, the pride it could create, the place that it can disrupt, or the negative narrative that it can disrupt, and just the all around inspiration that it served for other communities. Like, it's communities on the West Side that have reached out to us in Inglewood, like, how did you all do the Billboard campaign? What did, you know, so that cross geographic communication all around art and place taking, really, you know, really how to shift that narrative. And so that's when I was like, okay, I got something else too. I got something else too. And so that's what motivated me to just be like, work on Folded Map now.
Nice. So Folded Map is up.
Yes.
It runs through October.
Mm-hmm.
The grind doesn't stop, I imagine.
No.
So what are you working on?
So the other thing that I, you know, having given the opportunity to have a platform, which is why I want to expand this platform so others can have access to it and be on it, because there's so many talented photographers here and visual artists here, that I was, it offers you the opportunity to do other projects, you know, and really get buy-in. So another thing that, since Inglewood is really big on place taking and place making, I've always wanted to do a video projection, because I was like, I've seen this in every other neighborhood but my home. And so that's the next thing that I'll be doing. I'm partnering with Black Archives, Renata Charlize, Zakiya Najiba, and my girl Paula Aguirre. We're going to do a large-scale video projection in Inglewood in September that will have a very interesting twist. It'll not only include historic photos of Black Chicago, but also resident photos of Inglewood. Wow. And so I'm working on that right now. And then, of course, I have another collection of resident or map twins for Folded Map that I'm trying to work on, as well as preparing a permanent home for Folded Map, because I was like, you know, October 20th gonna come before you know it. I was like, where Folded Map gonna be after that? So I want to create, you know, a website or YouTube, you know, something where people can access it. And then I'm also really interested in creating a guided conversation lesson around it, a curriculum around it, because I want Folded Map to continue to inspire, especially youth, for them to understand that their observations, their voice is critical. And I constantly want to remind youth that Folded Map was with me when I was a teenager.
That's right.
And it just stuck with me since. And so what you think of at that age, what you value at that age, the ideas you have, just hold on to them. They're so valuable and they deserve a platform and a voice. So I really want to create like a curriculum, a toolkit around it using.
Well, YCA would love to be a part of that process.
Oh, okay, great.
And also, I mean, you know, if you're not already talking to the right folks at CPS, that is a ready-made program for them. Yeah. And I think about all of the young people who travel, you know, hours to get to mm-hmm. a school that is outside of their neighborhoods and mm-hmm. all of the things that they're witnessing and documenting in their own minds. And this would, I think, unlock some of that to be, you know, essential for the city. So
yes, and their responses, I would love to be able to include this. And yeah, because it's critical. And bringing youth voices and observations is really important to me. So, you know, I definitely want to create a curriculum, a toolkit, a Folded Map toolkit, which will have the accompanying photos and videos. Because outside of a virtual permanent home, I was like, where will it be? And then if it's in another exhibition space, that would be great. But it's something that happens after the exhibition space, you know, where people, it sits with them a little bit, or they can think about it. You know, I just want people to be able to access it regardless of it being exhibited. And so that's what I'm really trying to work on right now, because I think it definitely is a useful tool to understand, to really concretely understand inequity and segregation in Chicago. And, you know, and we're fortunate enough to have, you know, our grid mapping system to display the inequities that exist in a very unique way, to kind of drive home the point of youth learning about neighborhoods, their own neighborhoods or different neighborhoods, but understanding redlining, those things that, you know, you learn in school or you may not, but it's very critical in how our city was defined and structured, and it really impacts how and why you have to travel to another school or why you can't travel to another school. So I really want to help people and youth understand that connection. So that's one of the things I'm working on, trying to make Folded Map a curriculum of
Word.
Some sort.
Word. Well, I guess I have one more question. Mm-hmm. Are you the type who is out with your camera every day, constantly snapping? Or?
I used to be.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I haven't been able to, and it's killing me.
Okay, so that is, but that is the kind of preferred method of engagement. Is
oh
the
yes,
constantly awake, aware,
constantly. Like it, like this year, since all of this stuff,
right?
I haven't been
able
to.
Your art takes you away from your art. Sometimes.
It does, yeah. And then a lot of the community work, because now, you know, I'm working for Resident Association of Greater Englewood, whereas before I was just one of the co-founders and, you know, occasional volunteers, and I could just come. And now, you know, I'm a staff person there, so a lot of the events that I used to document. I'm working at it now, so I can't do it. But what it has done, it has made me be very active in finding young talent that can replace the fact that I can't. So I do like that aspect. But yeah, I definitely have some other photography projects that are like an extension of Folded Map. One of them is, I just have the title. It's probably going to be called Belonging, but it's really looking at how youth from different neighborhoods, how they not only describe their neighborhoods and interact with their own environment, but I do want youth to meet, specifically young Black boys. I really think it's interesting how, regardless of Chicago being segregated and young Black boys can be raised on the North Side and South Side, they still end up having very similar feelings about where they belong, or and how they feel excluded from certain spaces like downtown. Or, you know, I really want to examine their interaction with our city and how you can grow up on different sides of town as a young Black boy or girl, but still you feel discriminated against. You feel, when you go to certain neighborhoods, you feel looked at in a different way. And so I really want to highlight that, probably coming from the fact that, you know, I have teenagers, and I remember, you know, certain places you can act up in, you know, and not even act up, but be a little bit more comfortable, you know. And you know that when you're a teenager and you're comfortable with your friends and you might be loud, you will get looked at in a different way if you're downtown or if you're in a certain neighborhood, but it's other neighborhoods you feel more comfortable in. So I really want to examine that and bring that to the forefront, because I think Chicago is the perfect place to really demonstrate that, because we're hyper segregated.
Yeah. Well, these are the stories and the images that I think will make us a better city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm so grateful that you make them. Where can people find you on the Interconnected Network?
I am online, tonikaj.com. All of my info, which so many of my friends are like, all your info should not be on there. But
yeah, probably.
But it's fine. It's okay. My cell phone number. It's been out there for a while.
All right.
My cell phone number, my email address at tonikaj.com.
Instagram.
Instagram
popping.
But I don't even know my handle. It's Tonika J, but on Twitter is Tonika GJ. I've had to have my cousin Dominique get me acclimated to that. I was so late into the Instagram game.
Well, yo, thank you so much for being here tonight, and for real, thank you for the work that you do.
I so enjoy this. It went by so fast.
It does, but you're great. So thank you.
I was right
appreciate
in my
you.
Mouth.
No, you're perfect. Yeah, appreciate you. Thank you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the corner store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the corner store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the corner store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.